You're listening to In This League
on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Ace. Featuring Bugman.
Oh, the yummy silence. Oh, it tastes so good, you guys.
Oh, he's on tilt. He's full tilt.
And the Welsh.
Nice.
Bugman, let's not overreact.
Do a little dance.
Are you serious?
Make a little pick. Get down tonight. What?
Nice.
New high score, is that bad?
Visit InThisLeague.com for full podcasts and more. Coming to your ears now.
What's up? It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Your host, that's us. I am Chris Welsh, who you can find on Twitter at IsItTheWelsh. Scott Bogman here. You can find him on Twitter at Bogman Sports. Boggs, we have a packed show. We almost can't waste any time. How excited are you in about a minute and a half to talk to Al Melchior, who is with FanRag and right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network?
I'm excited because we haven't talked to Al yet before. So it's always fun to have a new guest on. To see if they're good. To see if
they're good. Al's probably good. Like CBS,
really
like
good with us is what I mean.
That's a good point.
Because there are people that are like, I don't understand your humor, right?
And they're
I just want to answer questions here.
Yeah. No, that's definitely right. There's like next question. It's like
it doesn't happen that often.
It happens,
but it's
though.
Always with a new guest. We're always kind of. Are you going to be fun? Are you going to be not so much fun? Like, how's it going to work out? And Al is fantastic.
He's so much fun, in fact. Very good
so
conversation
much
here.
Fun.
Lots of Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton talk. If you guys haven't seen, go on my Twitter, at IsItTheWelsh. I posted up a couple good questions that had a lot of industry guys on it. And I put up a poll, if you can go see the results, of Aaron Judge versus Giancarlo Stanton. And Bogman, Judge had the lead last time I looked. Giancarlo Stanton losing to Aaron Judge rest of season value.
And we also put this poll up, what like 35 seconds after Stanton gets hit on his hand.
True.
So,
yeah, that's very true. Well, injury.
Of course, it's a day
bias.
That ends in Y, so there's some injury scare with Giancarlo Stanton. So.
No doubt. A lot of guys. But we got a lot to cover here with Al Melchior here in just a minute. We're talking Judge. We're talking Stanton, Carlos Martinez, and we got some great player debates. That's hour one. Hour two, that's for you fantasy football fans. June is here. Fantasy football is around the corner. ITL is in full football mode. Go to InThisLeague.com. Check out the ITL Fantasy Football Podcast, where we are actually going to be going through a slow mock draft that we conducted. We're going to get through the first probably six rounds, maybe eight, I'm not sure. But you're going to hear some of the analysis in there. And I'm telling you, you want to tune in. You don't want to miss it because there's craziness in the second round. There's a crazy pick in the second round of this mock draft that we are going to talk about, and I don't want you to miss it. So if you do, go search ITL Fantasy Baseball. Go search ITL Fantasy Football Podcast, or you can find it on demand right here at fantasysportsnetwork.com/radio, and you can listen to In This League, because I don't want you to miss it. So if you know you're going to be like, I can't get to the app or something, go back and listen to it as we break down 2017 early NFL mock draft. But let's get to it. Guest line is a buzzin'. Let's go.
His next guest, you know, for
ITL. And here.
Up on the ITL guest line now, he is Al Melchior, who you can find, well, I would say everywhere. All the important places Al Melchior is. Like, I want to say there's probably like an old tagline to that. Like, everywhere that's important, that is Al. You can find him on FanRag, who is one of the big, really up-and-coming sites. And I say that just because they're newer to the industry, but they've got great names. You can also listen to the FanRag show on FNTSY Monday, Thursday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, as well as Sunday, noon Eastern. You can also find the Bullpen Report by Al on FanGraphs, almelchior.com. Al, is there anything that you aren't doing right now?
Everything that's not that.
Okay. So very little. Very little, actually, as a matter of fact. You can find him on Twitter at AlMelchiorBB. I have a question that I want to pose to both of you. I put it on Twitter earlier. I'm going to start with you, Al, and then we'll go to Bogman, and then we're going to get into the actual questions. This is like the snack.
Or pre-pre-show.
Yeah, the pre-pre-show, exactly. So I posed this question earlier because Aaron Judge is just a monster. He's just an absolute beast. He's ridiculous at this point in the season, and I think to a degree everybody has kind of sat back and I don't want to call it shade, but we've sat back and said, well, he's good, but he can't be this, he can't be that.
Possibly keep happening.
No,
right.
Exactly. It's the Eric theme from a month ago, which maybe is a little bit telling. But after the two home runs and him having the hardest hit, in StatCast era, exit velocity of a home run, I put this out on Twitter and I put a couple people on it and I got a bunch of responses. I asked, legit question, after Trout and Harper, How big is the list of players you want over Judge? Hashtag all rise. I had to do that, by the way. Put Spore, Pisapia, Howard Bender, Sammy Reed on it, and everyone kind of jumped in. I'm going to give you guys a couple setup here of what they said, and then Al, I want to get your take on it. Sammy Reed, by the way, said nobody. It was just, it's Judge after Trout.
Wow.
I know, after Trout and Harper. Spore had a good list that this was his list, and I think this was it. And a bunch of listeners jumped in too, so if people want to jump on it, they can find my Twitter handle, is it the Welsh in the question. Spore responded back with Bryant, Betts, Correa, Altuve, Turner, Arenado. He had two Turners. Am I missing? There's not two Turners there, right?
Yeah, well, he probably just threw him twice.
Machado, Lindor, Kershaw, Blackman. That would put him, actually, because he put two Turners in there, that would put him at 13. That would put Aaron Judge at 13 here, and plenty other debate here. So I now bring it to the table for both of you. How big is the list of players after the top two behind Aaron Judge?
I'm a lot closer to Paul Spore on that. I didn't recall hearing Paul Goldschmidt's name on his list.
I'll bet you that's a Turner one because he put Turner twice. Let's assume one of those is Goldschmidt.
Probably supposed to be Goldschmidt.
Okay,
right.
So that would put Aaron Judge at 14. Yes, so go on.
Yeah. And Lindor was on the list, right?
Was he? Because actually, that's funny that you say that because Lindor became the topic of conversation. No, he was not because somebody actually asked that exact question on this thread and was hitting him on it.
Well, that's why. Okay, well, I don't know why I heard that. I'm hearing things apparently, but I was just gonna say I wouldn't include Lindor. And Stanton wasn't on that list, right?
Stanton was not. Now I'm looking at the list again. Yeah, he actually did have Lindor, did not have Stanton. Only one pitcher: Bryant, Betts, Correa, Altuve, Turner, Arenado, Goldie, Machado, Lindor, Kershaw, Blackman.
Yeah, I think I'll sub in Stanton for Lindor, and just to kind of copy the rest of Paul's list.
Tell me about that then. Okay, so you have Stanton over Aaron Judge. Aaron Judge is actually being Giancarlo Stanton from 2 years ago. Like he's playing as old Giancarlo Stanton, but you still believe in Stanton over Judge.
I do, and it's a tough one. It's a really, really tough one. I know I asked the question, I think, on my own podcast, within the last few weeks, and of course Judge just keeps on producing. So the bigger that sample gets, the harder it is to just kind of wave him off as, he'll regress. But that said, yeah, he will regress. I do worry about the strikeouts with Judge. And we've seen what Stanton can do. He's incredibly streaky. And yeah, there's been a considerable injury history there. But maybe it's just living in South Florida for all those years. But I mean, he goes on these 1 or 2 month binges where he hits like nobody else. So we've seen that capability over the last few years. I feel like we've only seen the best of Aaron Judge so far, at least this season. So yeah, I'll give Stanton the edge just mostly because I've seen more of him.
Are you saying that no one said Ryan Zimmerman?
No one said Ryan Zimmerman. I didn't see
Mark Reynolds. Nobody said Mark Reynolds.
No, Justin Smoke. Believe. Justin Smoke didn't get
Zach,
in
Zach
either.
Cozart?
Yeah. Probably a close edge there. Now, Bogman, I ask you real quick because foolishly, we talked about this where, weeks ago, Pisapia and I had the debate on FNTSY where we posed Judge or Conforto, and we both went Conforto, and our guest went Conforto. And then even last week, I think we were talking with Azer about that, and I used the excuse, and hopefully it's not the dumbest thing I've said on this show because I've said some dumb things that, one of the reasons that I kind of have to hold Judge coming down a little bit is there has to be regression, but I'm not sure Conforto can win that argument anymore. It poses back to you, though, how big is the list after those top two of people behind Judge Bogman?
Well, I mean, it's 2.5 months, so I absolutely will not kill you for that yet. I think that's still it's still fine, but I think I'm with Spore's list. I definitely wouldn't put Stanton or Lindor in there. Not that I dislike either one of those guys, but just what we've seen from Judge could be he could be a 40 homer hitter every single year. I might throw Freeman in there. Freeman was on a pretty prodigious rate when he got hurt. So maybe Freddie Freeman would go in there. I don't know if I'd put him above Judge.
What about Joey Votto for both of you guys?
Right in there. He would have to be in that group too, I think.
I agree. And yeah, when you were first rattling off Paul's list, I was listening for Votto. I don't I guess it wasn't there. But yeah, no, I would put Votto ahead of Judge for now.
It's a lot of names. Other one, we'll start with you, Boggs. Springer. Springer was one that people were kind of like on the conversation, because Votto was one a couple people wanted over, but people were like, Springer, maybe close.
Nah.
Yeah, okay. I agree. Nah.
Okay. I'm a Lindor guy. I'm surprised actually you both didn't have Lindor. I might actually still go Lindor over just because of
Lindor hitting 259. I mean,
no, you know. Get out of here. Now you're going to make me go look.
What's he hitting?
Now you're going to make me go. I'm going to look right now. What are you talking about hitting? If he is
279,
be depressed. He's hitting 259. How did you know that? That's horrible. All right, I hate myself. All right, whatever. All right, Malcolm, maybe you're right. All right, Aaron Judge is hitting all the world. I pose that question to everybody. You can go on. You can tweet at me. Is it the Welsh Bogman Sporting? And let us know. Are the In This League Pod Twitter handle? How big is that list behind Aaron Judge? Join in the thread that we already have going on, because what has happened in conversation is he's a mid-second round pick, almost kind of like clearly to everybody.
Well, I have to ask this. So our guy Mosier hit me up, and he was talking about trading Aaron Judge, and he was getting back a pretty good return. It was Conforto, who we mentioned before, who 2 weeks ago you were saying Conforto over Judge, and also Gleyber Torres.
And he got Vlad Jr. Actually, it's a dynasty. He got Vlad Jr.
I know. But the crux of the trade, to not convolute it with all these prospects, it was Conforto and Torres for Judge.
What do you think, Al?
Whew.
I know.
that's tough to pick a side. I think I'd stick with Judge.
Now, if I don't know how big of a prospect guy you are, you add Vlad Jr. in there, because he did get Vlad Jr. in the deal in a dynasty. Okay. He got Vlad Jr., Gleyber Torres, and Conforto, essentially a couple other prospects you don't have to want to worry about for Judge.
Like Anthony Alford. Yeah,
well, you know, and I'm in a couple of dynasty leagues. I think I'm much more biased than a lot of other owners in favor of current major league talent. And, you know, you're probably going to see a trend emerging here, because when we were talking about Stanton versus Judge, I said, well, I'm going with the bigger track record here. So I love Gleyber Torres, and Vlad Jr. is a great piece to put in that deal too. But you know, what if those guys don't pan out? Between Judge and Conforto, and I really like Conforto, but to even that out, I think I would want somebody with some major league experience that I had a little bit more confidence in.
What's the likelihood that Aaron Judge bottoms out from this point? I mean, it's been, you know, what are we at? We're at 8 weeks, 10 weeks of him playing phenomenally. Obviously, he's the number three ranked player in all of baseball. He's hitting .332 with 19 homers and 50 runs, 44 driven in with 5 swipes. I mean, he's been amazing. But what's the chance of him, you know, bottoming out? And what is the lowest you could see him going next year if he just had a crap second half?
Hard to imagine going below, say, round 4. I mean,
I totally agree.
We all have a recency bias that, you know, maybe I'm underestimating, because maybe if it was a really bad second half and a really bad August and September in particular, maybe that would, you know, have enough of a stench to push him lower. But at this point, it's hard for me to imagine that.
It's crazy. It's such a crazy conversation to have. Love to hear everybody's take on it. Aaron Judge, almost an anomaly at this point with how ridiculous he's playing. We haven't even started the questions, but we had such a good debate at the beginning, we just had to do that.
All right, we got questions coming up right after this break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we're back. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Is it the Wells? Bogman Sports. Those are the Twitter handles. InThisLeague.com. That's the website. Al Melchior, that's the guest. And we've got questions. All right, Al, question number one I want to get at here. And this was actually kind of posed to me prior to his last start. And then the start went off and it was amazing. But let me phrase it like this. We had talked about true SP1s a couple weeks ago. We had Doug Thorburn and Sammy Reed on together. And we were kind of going through and asking who were the true SP1s that were left, you know, a couple years ago or 2 years ago, it was like a list of like 20, it felt like. And then we kind of learned after last season, oh, starting pitching isn't quite that deep. I think we identified, Bogman, correct me if I'm wrong. I think we identified 5 with them. It was Max, Sale, Strasburg, Yu Darvish, and Kershaw, obviously Kershaw. And Thor and Madison Bumgarner weren't put in that just because they were injured. I think when they come back, that's pretty safe to assume. That was the list of SP1s. But after the most recent game, a complete game 11 strikeout game by Carlos Martinez, I ask you, is Carlos Martinez a true number one rest of season, and how do you see him, if not?
I don't see him as a true SP1. He's, to me, he's on the fringe of it. So he's, you know, he's top 12, but he's at the bottom of that 12. And even when we look at what he's, you know, he's done more recently, the walks are just, they're not a problem. Obviously, if I'm saying he's a fringe SP1, but the, you know, part of it is that we've lost so many reliable pitchers that, you know, that's thinned out that, like you said, that group of 20 from a year or two ago. But it's also that the top is just so ridiculous to keep up with Kershaw and Sale and Scherzer in particular, you know, walking a batter, you know, every three innings or so. That alone is just going to disqualify you. So, and he's actually allowed a fair amount of hard contact as well. So I'm not really buying the low BABIP, which is, I think that's the thing that's really elevated him up with the rest of that group over the last, I guess, what, month and a half or so, that he's really been going well.
He's kind of like an anomaly. I just want to point this out because you're kind of right. His home run to fly ball, it's up a full percentage point from last season. He's pitching less ground balls, giving up more homers per nine. His walks are about the same, but his strikeouts are up over 2K per nine. And an identifier that I really hone in on, which makes me lean in the side of where you're talking about, even up into the SP1 type of category. We've talked about this with Spore a long time ago, of something you always like to look at, the, kind of like a true meter of how these guys are playing, is whip. And Carlos Martinez is traditionally a guy that, you know, statistically he can be better than what the whip might show. But this season, 1.04 compared to a 1.22, and his walks are up. So, I mean, maybe there's a luck factor to it, but if that whip were in like that 1-2 area, I might think, well, we're going to see a lot more regression. But it feels like his stats are all – he's like this anomaly to me of what he's doing, and he's rocking a sub-3 ERA now and almost a sub-1 whip.
Yeah, and I think both of those numbers, the ERA and the whip, are BABIP-driven. And, you know, you pointed out – now you're talking about, you know, home runs, you know, for fly ball. So that's balls out of play. But I just, you know, I just think that he's got more balls in play coming that are going to be hits and drive up both of those ratios.
Okay, so let me ask you this then. I'm going to give you a mini little debate here, rest of season. Would you rather have Chris Archer or Carlos Martinez?
To me, it's easy Archer.
Okay, easy.
Easy. How about Paxton?
I'll go Carmart over Paxton.
Okay,
if nothing else, just because I worry about injuries with Paxton.
Yeah, well, and it wasn't like the best performance he had on Sunday. Okay, I mean, that kind of answers it. I mean, he hasn't gone in that territory, and once you get Strasburg, or once you get Bumgarner and Thor back, I mean, I'm not quite sure if you and Strasburg still necessarily belong. Do you kind of agree with that statement, by the way? Like, are you and Strasburg sitting in that true SP1 category, or is it the top three guys plus the returning injured Syndergaard and Bumgarner?
Me and Strasburg? No, you mean Darvish.
Sorry, Darvish and Strasburg. Yeah, not you. I mean, Al Melchior, you probably have some great material.
Why you?
You probably got a good slider like I do, but I'm not sure that you're going to belong as an SP1.
You should see that.
I do agree. Darvish, I feel like maybe I'm giving Darvish more of a free pass than I'm giving Carmart. But yeah, no, I put him in, it's like 1A and 1B. So to me, there's Kershaw, Scherzer, and Sale that are really on their own. But then, you know, I would consider Darvish and Strasburg and Greinke. And now I would say, though, the guy that I've graduated up into that group, Lance McCullers, you know, I would consider those guys solid number one starters.
Oh, okay. That's
Carlos
a good
Martinez
one.
Is like, he's like the number one SP2 by a lot, because he's a guy that's always going to be good. He's going to provide you some strikeouts. He doesn't walk too many, and he never gets blown up, at least this season. You know, the most runs he's given up in a game is 5. He's done it twice, but he has way more. He has, what, 3-4 zeros and 2 5s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's just such a steady Eddie. He's really good. I can see him on that borderline SP1, but I think maybe we have to see a couple more complete game shutouts.
Well, okay, so then you put him in there. Phrase the question the last way that we kind of haven't done it here yet is Carlos Martinez a sell high for you?
Jeez. I suppose he would be. I will opposed to putting him on the market. I think I'm hesitating to answer this just because in my own mind, I have a hard time imagining that I'd get, you know, more than 100, what I perceive as 100% value for him.
Well, if you could get him a course.
I would do that swap.
Okay. What about, this is a tough one. I don't know if this is a good one, but Zach Greinke. Would you trade Mark Carmar for Zach Greinke?
Yeah, I would.
Oh, okay. Oh, okay. That went a different direction than I thought it might. Okay. So, I mean, I think that's it. I think that is a sell high type of area. I view like Zach Greinke on par and Zach McCullers. Lance McCullers is kind of on par as well. So you're kind of flipping it to arms you trust. Again, like you said, maybe a theme of yours, arms you trust more than something like Carlos Martinez.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And it's, you know, with McCullers where, you know, I feel like he's just so clearly taking it to another level with the extreme ground ball rate and the extreme strikeout rate and not quite as consistent in terms of going deep into games, but I just feel like he's gone to that other level and he's gone there fairly consistently this year. Martinez, I'm not sure if he's on a new level this year.
Okay.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but the thing that I don't like about McCullers and moving on to the next question, it kind of fits, is I don't like the extreme injury history rate. I think dude has always been hurt. Hopefully he kind of has put it together and is not going to. But what about Giancarlo Stanton? All right, I've been a big, you know, I don't want Stanton where he's going because he's never going to be there when you need him in the playoffs if you're playing a lot of head-to-head, which we do. Does this hand injury that he's had, I know the x-rays came back negative, does this affect your – I don't think it does your value on Stanton because you were saying you still have him ahead of Judge. He just seems to be the most unlucky human being in baseball. How can we trust him moving forward if he's always going to be hurt?
It's hard to do. I mean, it's sort of like I joked about Zach Cozart earlier, but it's sort of like the inverse of that where seems like the most lucky hitter this year. And, you know, you stick to your guns because you have a process and you say, well, okay, I'm looking at these batted ball indicators and I'm looking at, the track record and it's just not adding up. So, you know, it's sort of like the inverse with Stanton. It's like, well, okay, you know, he got hit in the face that time. He got hit in the hand here. He's had a series of freak injuries. And yeah, I mean, it adds up. And at some point you have to say, okay, there must be something to this, but maybe there isn't. You know, maybe he really is just unlucky. And at some point that luck evens out.
He needs like what Jorah Mormont has, that type of armor from Game of Thrones. That's what he needs to be going to play with. Or at least somebody needs to send him a picture of Craig Biggio, right, with that big arm armor that he used to wear. I mean, that's why Biggio was the most hit player in baseball ever. Because he wore all that armor. Like, Stanton needs to do something like that. Okay, so once Stanton gets back, what can you sell him for? What would you an expected return be if you're like, look, you know, all right, I'm done with this. This scare was enough for me. I have to be done with Giancarlo Stanton. What realistically are you going to be able to get back for him?
I think maybe the best that I could do, and the thing is I would be unlikely to even probably try that or put a whole lot of energy into trying to sell him because I do feel like I'm consistently more optimistic than my fellow owners. But maybe if I could get another player that I feel similarly about who is sort of a mild buy low, and I feel pretty confident about the improvement to come. So, you know, maybe a pitcher like Jacob deGrom, who, you know, has struggled more than, you know, I think we actually struggled quite a bit more than we would have expected. If I had a need for pitching and, you know, it was a way to kind of even out a surplus and a need, you know, maybe I would do that. Maybe I'd do Stanton for DeGrom. I'm just trying to think at other positions who might fit that. I was going to say maybe Encarnacion, who's starting to heat up, but no, actually, I don't feel like that's fair value. Maybe if it was Encarnacion in the second good piece. But that would be the approach I would take is like, okay, who's out there that's also being undervalued?
I think that's
what about like a Miguel Sano? If you could get Sano for Stanton, would you do that?
I don't think so. I don't think so because unless it was a positional need and I needed that third base eligibility, it's like, well, Sano can do what Stanton can do, but I've got Stanton. So I don't think I'd do that.
I agree. I think, you know, if you're in that world, because unfortunately Stanton has kind of become one of these players you believe or you don't. I'm not sure you can have a middle ground with Stanton anymore.
Yeah, at some point, I think you just have to kind of say he's just an injury-prone player, even though they're freak injuries. I mean, you know, guys don't get hit on the hand every single day, but Goldie got hit on the hand the other day.
Yeah.
And he's fine. He stayed in the game. Like, yeah. And here goes Giancarlo Stanton for x-rays, and he misses the next game.
But what I think happens, though,
it becomes a whole thing.
It's a trigger. You know? It's like a trigger. It's he gets hit in the hand, he goes out, and you're just like, oh, this is – oh, right, I forgot. Well, it's just like I forgot. Stanton gets hurt a lot, and every year he's going to miss that time. So I think it becomes a trigger. So if you're – I mean, if you don't believe Stanton is the type of player that can stay healthy, I mean, this is just your opportunity. No one's going to be able to convince you otherwise. Al's not. I'm not. Bogman's not. No one's going to be able to convince you otherwise. So what you're staring at is probably not this moment. You're not staring at a high right now because he's – potentially going to come back Tuesday coming off of negative x-rays. But once he comes back and starts performing, this is where you need to get out. And you need to get out with probably the value that Al's talking about somewhere in that range. But if you're a non-believer, you know, you might be willing to go the Lindor type, or maybe not Lindor because he's hitting 259 as we learned. But, you know, like in that range of type of player. But I think I lean more with Al on this because you guys know, like, I don't value the quote-unquote injury-prone or just – I mean, he really is unlucky, but, you know, it's got to end at some point. You know, the Chris Paul effect. Like, he's not always going to play 60 games every year. He's going to, like, eventually play about a full season. When he's on the field, he's just ridiculous. He's as ridiculous – you know what? He's as ridiculous as Aaron Judge, but nobody cares because Aaron Judge is otherworldly right now. Like, this is what – Stanton does. Stanton hits the ball 120 miles an hour out of the stadium. He hits it, you know, breaks windows. He does this type of stuff. But Aaron Judge has been doing it for two straight months and is the new kid on the block. So nobody cares what Stanton's doing this season. If anything, he's maybe undervalued. Maybe this is the moment to buy on him, Al.
Aaron Judge does it without x-rays every week.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I like about Aaron Judge.
But Al, maybe this is the time to buy on him.
I think it is actually. He's really getting kind of buried, you know, between Judge and, you know, the Nationals, you know, sort of just collectively going crazy you know, so many stories and, you know, the younger players, you know, coming up. I mean, you know, I've had more, you know, Twitter questions about Lewis Brinson in the last 24 hours than, you know.
You're going to get another soon.
About Stan in 2 years. So.
You're going to get another soon, though.
You know, so no, I think he is getting overlooked. And on my own podcast, I had Chris Towers on, and I, you know, posed this question to him, and he said, yeah, he thinks actually Stan might be a better hitter than ever right now because he hasn't sacrificed the power, and he is hitting for average, and yet he's getting overshadowed by all these, you know.
Well, he's not hitting 330 like Aaron Judge is, and Aaron Judge is hitting 330 right now. I mean, we're all excited because Stanton is hitting 279 or whatever he's hitting right now.
But let me see.
Am I 100% right on that, the Welsh?
Yeah,
is that
probably
exactly right.
I'm tired of that. I'm tired of that. But what I'm saying is, you're right about that. Take that average, man. I don't want to say this, but I'm going to say it.
He's a monster, but it's just it's
280. It would be surprising, but less surprising because of what he's doing at this moment. I would walk away from this season a little surprised if Aaron Judge has a better batting average than Giancarlo Stanton at the end of the year. Now, that's maybe a statement
I'm sorry. Say that again one more time.
Maybe that's a statement for a month ago. It's hard to say.
Stanton will have a better average than Aaron Judge at the end of the season.
I'm saying it's going to surprise me at the end of the year where if Judge has a significantly higher batting average than Stanton. Projectably, they're both about the same type of average player. If Stan has a 275 and Judge has a 300, that doesn't seem like a sustainable number going into next season, and people are going to pay for a 300 Aaron Judge. So what I'm saying is I will be shocked if Judge doesn't have a regression to the point where at the end of the season their average isn't similar in nature.
I buy that. Absolutely. Okay.
Oh, all right, let's decompress here. So I'll take a breath there. There's a lot of Stanton here. Let's talk about the bullpen. People can find it on FanGraphs. You do the bullpen report, and I suggest people go take a look at that because there is nothing that is more fluid and stressful. We talk about Stanton and Judge and how stressful that conversation is. There's nothing more stressful than the bullpen. And we saw more of that happen this weekend where Pittsburgh made a change. Tony Watson is out. And you wrote about it where Hurdle, because a lot of people immediately, now this is a really goofy situation, so this is why this is going to be great to hear from you about it, where immediately everybody went to get Felipe Rivera because he's been amazing. But Hurdle kind of talked about Rivero being that Andrew Miller role, as you wrote, which potentially can make Nicasio as the save chance guy. But then Rivero got a 4-out save the other night. So I ask you, what do you think here? Is Nicasio the pickup if you're speculating on saves, or is it clearly Rivero? I mean, I'd be surprised if Rivero's even available, but Nicasio might still be out there for some people.
Yeah, no, Nicasio is far more available. Rivero actually, in some of my shallower leagues, is still there. And no, I think Rivero is absolutely the guy. And that was actually the conclusion I reached in, I guess it was the Friday bullpen report. And I'll be updating. I'm doing another one right after this podcast. So nice. It definitely is. That situation needs an update because, yeah, he's had two saves against the Marlins since then. And he's just looked spectacular. So I think he's the guy. I think in the vast majority of situations where a manager comes out and says, I'm going committee, or I want, you know, the flexibility of using this player in the highest leverage situation, whenever that happens, that if the manager ever seriously embarks on that, it usually doesn't even last a week. And I just think that Rivero is, you know, he was given the first shot and he did what you would expect, which was he went out and he dominated. So I don't see him now losing his grip on it. And I think Nicasio is just, I think he's barely in the picture.
You know, I guess we see this every year, and I was about to phrase this a different way, but now that I started thinking about it in my mind, how last season, you know, we saw guys like Edwin Diaz come in and kind of immediately throttle themselves into a high positionally, you know, ranked closer. We've seen Robert Ozuna. We've seen a lot of guys kind of getting thrown into that role. This season, Rivero seems to be one of those players that just had such an amazing non-closer year who was put into it. And then you get a guy like Corey Knebel in Milwaukee who's also been, like, ridiculous. I mean, are these two guys that might – is it – I don't know if I want to say it. Would they be, like, top 10 closers rest of the season? Maybe top 15 to be safer?
So you're talking about Rivero and Knebel?
Yeah, Knebel. Yeah, yeah.
I think so. And it's funny that you raised Knebel because that was the when I was talking about managers abandoning you know, their ideas of using their best reliever in a non-safe situation. That was the last one I remember where Craig Counsell, you know, came out and I think on more than one occasion, you know, talked about how that's how he wanted to use Knebel, and he's been the ninth inning guy consistently ever since he made that statement. So and I you know, and it's because they're both among the most dominant relievers in the game. So maybe it's a different situation, like with the Nationals, where nobody's really a standout. But, you know, when you have one guy who is, I think, just so much better than everybody else, you know, I think a manager would have a hard time not relying on that guy in the ninth inning, unless it's Terry Francona.
Or Tony Lavella, who does. I mean, I guess Rodney has still been getting right. saves, but Archie Bradley needs to be that guy. Is there anybody? I mean, that's just my opinion, but I don't know.
That's a good point.
Yeah. Is there any other guy, since I feel like Knebel and Rivero are like those speculative guys, who are you speculating on right now? Like, who's the next range of player that you're like, this is the guy that people should pick up in lieu of getting saves or, you know, someone losing their job?
Well, my top target right now is Pat Neshek. I'm not 100% sure he's the closer right now because Pete McCannon made a statement that Hector Neris needed to work on his pitches, but I almost feel like this is like a, you know, congressional committee hearing or something. parsing words, trying to figure out what they mean.
What's the record, by the way, of a team of that has had closers in? Like what is the record of amount of different closers one team has had in a season? It's got to be like, is Philly going to beat that?
They're on pace, whatever the record is.
I feel like they have to. I feel like they're going to be the one. Like, there's going to be, like, the ninth guy.
Bad Astros team, some bad Diamondback teams for a long time.
I don't know. They're going through a lot. Yeah. But, yeah, okay, yeah, good. Okay, so Pat Neshek is one of those top options.
So he's the top target. Just, you know, I mean, he's good. He's really good, and he has the best opportunity right now. And Keanu Kayla, Matt Bush, I don't really trust a whole lot. So I think Kayla's probably next in line there. So that's more of a speculative pick for me. But I picked him up in an Ottinger league this week. Granted, you have the benefit in that format of, you know, getting value even if they're not getting saved. So I'm just trying to think who. I mean, those would be the top two. But for me right now, you know, right. And again, it's like you said, so fluid. Ask me again in 2 days. There might be some name I'm not even thinking of now. Neshek, to me, is the top target.
Al, I'm going to ask you about your favorite player in baseball. Lewis Brinson got called up because VR is on the disabled list. If forced with the decision, would you drop a guy like Domingo Santana, his teammate, who's been great over the last month, for that high-end type of potential that comes with an elite-level type of prospect like Lewis Brinson.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one because I think you certainly want to try to add Brinson wherever you can. But, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, he's such a great talent. You figure these things will somehow work, this will work itself out.
Cody Bellinger.
But, yeah, exactly, exactly. So, but, I mean, that's a really, you know, Brewers have a nice problem there. They've got too many good players right now. And the thing is, Santana, I don't know that Brinson's going to be better than Santana this year. I'm buying into what Santana has done. He's a line drive hitter, so, and he's brought the strikeouts down. So I actually think he can help you with batting average now. And, you know, he's got a nice power-speed combo, and that sounds a lot like what Lewis Brinson might do.
Right.
Okay, what about a guy like Keon Broxton on the other side, who 10 stolen bases, 6 homers, but hitting .224 and has struggled? I'm looking here. He has one hit, which was on Sunday against the Diamondbacks, which was a homer, but that was his first hit in the prior 8 games that he had had. So 7 games wow. before that, plus that game, that was his first freaking hit that he's had.
That was in an 11-1 game where they're just or 11-0 game at that point where they're just tossing it over the middle, getting it over with.
Exactly. So hitting .224, that, I mean, outside of Braun getting traded, which is an option here, but that's not the point. We're not actually talking about Milwaukee, but for fantasy owners, I think a lot of fantasy owners could own a player like a Domingo Santana. They also
someone
could own
who's
a player,
hot.
Yeah, they could also own a player
that's
like
Broxton. Basically the question, right? It's a player who's not a, you know, he's a streaming player, but he's playing hot right now versus a guy that could wind up being good for your team because he's an elite level prospect.
And Milwaukee kind of represents that because Santana's right. a player that is playing so hot right now, and Broxton is a player potential-wise that looks so nice but is not playing well. What about Broxton?
Well, I would drop Broxton for Brinson or even some other players in a second. In fact, I dropped him tonight. So many lineups I set in one, you know, all in one sitting that I honestly I can't remember off the top of my head who I did pick up for him. But yeah, I just, you know, like I said, it's such a numbers game there in Milwaukee. But Broxton definitely looks like the one with the best chance to lose significant playing time. So I have no problem with dropping him.
Okay. Sticking on the outfield, this will be the last question, then we'll get to player debates here. Andrew McCutchen has been a top 20 player over the last 2 weeks. It's the ITL effect, as we call it. As soon as we talked about being over, he starts to right the ship. But we ask you, how long does he need to have the ship upright here for you to actually believe it? Like, what's the point where you believe Andrew McCutchen is back, even if back isn't old Andrew McCutchen?
He's there. He's there for me because even though the batting average is down, he's been bringing it back up. The power's there. The stolen base pace is better than it's been in a couple years. So, you know, maybe this even is going to be vintage Andrew McCutchen. I actually don't really expect that. I feel like the steals are a little bit of a bonus. You know, the one thing that's just not really up to par for him is on ground balls, he's hitting .192. And I just don't think that he's become, you know, such a sluggardly slugger. He's going to be this guy that doesn't hit .200 on ground ball. So I have to think that that's going to turn around without him having to, you know, actually improve anything. And, you know, the power speed combo has been there, you know, pretty nicely so far.
Bogman. So you've already
Al's
bought
buying.
It.
He's
I've
buying.
Already bought. Yeah.
Bogman, are you excited? Bogman, you're a known Andrew McCutchen lover.
I'm not excited yet.
I think you're excited.
I want to wait. You know, I want him to keep this up to the All-Star break. It's just been really annoying. I have him on 2 teams. He has completely let me down. I'm doing bad in both those leagues. I like the fact that he started to respond when they moved him down the order. Like, that's what I like about this whole thing. I just don't know if that, you know, unless they move him up, he's going
to
keep it.
Only thing I want to point out to what you're saying, though, and this is what's important with fantasy and people listening, and you know, I'll speak to this if you'd like after I'm done, is just I get what you're saying that you want to see it till All-Star break, but here's the problem. That's not going to work to wait till All-Star break if you'd like to buy him. If he is doing –
oh,
he's
no,
on the
you
same
gotta
clip,
buy him now.
Yeah, well, that's right. The point, though. Is like you have to – like this is the time right now. Like you got to believe or not believe. Like if you think he's going to do –
I don't believe.
Okay, then that's more of the answer because if he does it till All-Star break, that's fantastic. But that's not going to do anything for anybody.
Well,
it's not
I think
anything
anytime
for
I think anytime you would say that I want to see it happen till here, I mean the answer is just I don't believe.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, I want to believe – I really want him to be better. I want him to be over this weird whatever is going on with him. What I really want is for him to grow those dreads back. But
I think you want to trade him is what you want to do. I think you're excited that there might be back so you can trade him, because
it's tough to trade him away, though, because I'm never going to get something that I want back for him right now. I'm a picky trader to begin with.
Yeah. You want Lindor? But, he's hitting 259. You want Lindor? Oh, give me a break. Are you thinking about that?
I would take Lindor.
Yeah. Al, you're taking Lindor over McCutcheon, right?
I think so, yeah. Okay.
See? I'm not the only one who hesitated.
I'm getting scared here. I'm getting scared.
Jerk.
No, no. I mean, I actually really did have to think about it. And I think the, you know, even though shortstop has gotten a lot deeper, that I, you know, I still think that Lindor's value relative to the position is a little higher than McCutcheon's right now.
Okay. Well, McCutcheon's back. That's what we got. Bachman, he's back. Don't worry about it. All right.
I would not say that he's back yet. I'm at 2 weeks. There are plenty of players that, you know, hit really well for 2 weeks. Hey, I'm sorry. I'm not saying he's back.
119 on Yahoo over the last over the whole season. 119. That's a start.
Those were the questions, but you know what is coming up immediately after this break. It is the world famous, everyone loves them, North America, South America, Europe, Asia, Africa, Antarctica. They all love the player debates, and they're coming up right after this break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
No way that's true.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, ITL Player Debates, we told you about this. It's essentially a rest-of-season value. So we're going to pit the players against each other, and you get to pick which side, you know, and you're not going to get any other extra stuff. You're just going to have to go with it and believe, and if you're wrong and you pick a really bad one, everyone will let you know about it, like me or Bachman. So let's play that game. This one is an interesting one, and you actually just tweeted about one of these guys. This was, speaking of being wrong, this was a player I'm so glad he's turning it around, because this I'm big on this guy, and I even admitted to it a couple weeks ago. Maybe I was really wrong, and then, of course, it reversed. Odubel Herrera, that was my guy this year, has not had a good start to the season, but as of late, I think he had like a stretch of like 10 hits where they were all extra base. They were homers and doubles. It was crazy. Versus Aaron Hicks, who has locked up essentially the outfield job even when Ellsbury comes back, and had a pretty phenomenal season. So, Al, we'll start with you. Odubel Herrera versus Aaron Hicks rest of season. Who do you want?
Give me Herrera. Definitely. You know, I am encouraged that he's picked up the pace lately. He's been a frustration most of the season, but I don't know, you know, why. I felt like he came in very undervalued this year. You know, I guess, Chris, that's kind of what you were saying, too. And I haven't bought into Hicks. I had an opportunity to pick him up in a league this week, and I just couldn't pull the trigger on it. And then, yeah, I took a closer look at the splits. 8 of the 10 home runs are at Yankee Stadium. And yeah, he will continue to play a lot of games there. But, you know, his batted ball stats just aren't that impressive. And I think at some point that home run pace is going to slow down, and the batting average is going to come down, and there's going to be a bunch of walks and, you know, not necessarily a whole lot else.
This is the true epitome, Bogman, of player debates here, where we take a player who is performing at a level that it's hard to pit against him. Like we're saying, Aaron Hicks hitting .317. The homers are in double digits. He's almost in double digit stolen bases versus a former proven commodity who's kind of pacing out. I mean, Hicks is kind of pacing out to be Odubel Herrera last year, but Odubel is really kind of, you know, it's tapering down. He's about hitting .250. I'm a big fan. What say you, Boggs?
Well, you know, the most interesting stat I find between both these guys is Hicks is hitting 58 points ahead of his career BABIP. 58 points. Odubel is 51 points below his career. So I think that, you know, these two are going to intersect eventually. Give me Odubel Herrera to climb back in, and Aaron Hicks to take a decent step back. I mean, this could always be the thing that you talked about last week, the Welsh, where – you know, we always say, you know, we're 10 weeks in here and we're going, nah, it's got to come down. It's got to come down.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe we're going to miss the boat on Aaron Hicks. And that is a definite possibility. But I don't know. Hicks has been around for a long time. And he's never hit like he has hit this year before. So something could have definitely changed. But I'm going to say that he's getting kind of lucky on the BABIP. And I'm going to go with Odubel Herrera.
Yeah, the power numbers they don't equate to you know the person that Hicks has proven us to be. You know, it's the Ron Chandler thing. You know, when a guy shows us who they are, let's believe it. And we've kind of seen, though Aaron Hicks has had moments. He's definitely he's like a small sample size of like Justin Upton, if you will. Like, you know, where Upton can have like a 2 month stretch or like E5 in the second half, but like Hicks can do it for like 2 weeks and then he kind of loses the opportunity. I look at the numbers, and I mean, there's some obvious stuff that doesn't make sense. Like the ISO is like, you know, more than double what it was last year. You are right. It's interesting. He's like just a typical low BAPIP type of player. He's got to come down. I'm a little worried with Herrera. Like when I look at like, okay, from fantasy perspective, where am I going to get my juice from? You know, where am I going to get my stolen bases, my homers? Are these guys going to get me runs and RBIs? The walk percentages are a lot different. The offenses are a lot different. Hicks is positioned himself in a lineup with guys like Matt Holliday and Aaron Judge and potentially future Gleyber Torres to be hit in a whole lot. He's got a better, you know, maybe the opportunity for stolen bases and runs are up there. I want to say Aaron Hicks. With all of that said, I am an Odubel Herrera fan. I always have been. I pretty much jumped off the ship, and then he just goes out and has just the most ridiculous 2 weeks. And I have to say that is a positive sign for everything. If we get Odubel Herrera, who we got in 2016, we're all going to walk away very, very happy. We're going to walk away fantasy owners very happy. I think at the end of the year, these guys are probably neck and neck in fantasy stats, and it would almost be fun at this moment to track homers, runs, and stolen bases, and average, actually, between the two. Maybe take out homers or RBIs from these two and track the four stats rest of season. And I think Odubel Herrera at this moment can beat that. It's a tough one, though.
All right, Al. We got some pitchers here for you. Jeff Hoffman, who has been the hotness, everybody's talking about him, versus Jose Berríos, who seems to be everybody's favorite young pitcher. Between these two guys, who do you want for the rest of the season?
I want Berríos over Hoffman, but with each start, I come around a little bit more on Hoffman. And really, you know, the differentiator for me is the fact that he's a Rocky, and I don't want to lean too heavily on that because they've got a pretty nice rotation right now, and Hoffman's not one of them. But you know, the rest of the guys in that rotation, for the most part, they're really good ground ball pitchers that you know can succeed seems pretty much anywhere. But Hoffman's the guy that, you know, with the exception of Tyler Anderson, who's on the DL, he's the guy who's actually going to give you strikeouts. He's got really good control. But so far this year, he's got a ground ball rate that I think is just under 30%.
It's 28.6, yeah.
I don't understand how that's going to work. So that one stat is what leads me to go to Berríos, who's a fly ball pitcher in his own right, but he gets to pitch at Target Field half the time. That's it for me.
I think you're right. I mean, that's like one of the biggest differentiators between these two. You go look at a pitcher in Colorado who pitches under 30% ground ball. That is a terrifying thought. That is a really terrifying thought. And, you know, a lot of people forget Jeff Hoffman was a really highly touted prospect when he was at the Blue Jays. And everyone kind of jumped ship when he was traded to the Rockies. I jumped ship when he was traded to the Rockies because it is scary. To me, I'm just echoing what Al said. I mean, it's a prime trade opportunity right now. Everyone is so excited about Jeff Hoffman going 4-0. He's striking guys out. He's leaving guys on base. I would move him because when it gets ugly, it'll get ugly in Colorado. Though, you know, it's kind of that, like we talk in football with Chris Harris, like a crutch argument. You don't want to make Colorado a crutch argument here. I've always trusted in Berríos' stuff. The K's are up. I know he'll try to work on the walks. I like the offense there. Colorado works as well. But I will take Minnesota over Colorado as a place that I feel more comfortable with my strikeouts. And I would sell Jeff Hoffman right now if I could.
Yeah. Also, Jeff Hoffman, three of his four starts have been on the road. So that has been working in his favor very well. So I'm with you guys. I'm definitely going to take Jose Berríos for all the information that you guys just said. I don't need to re-spit it out. It's definitely Berríos for me.
Good stuff from Al Melchior, who you can find over at FanRag Sports. You can find the FanRag Radio on FNTSY Monday, Thursday, Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, as well as Sunday, noon Eastern. Go check out Al Melchior, AlMelchior.com. Did I do that right?
You did.
Oh, thank man.
You.
I'm proud of it. All right, Al. We love you, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and by the way, I apologize for not calling you the Welsh earlier.
God. It's almost embarrassing. It's almost embarrassing that we even have to do this. I know, Bog. It's just, it's so brutal. And
he's like, how about the Welsh as a name? I'm like, that's fine, but I will only ever call you the Welsh.
I know.
I'll never call you Welsh, ever.
It's just, it's going to stick with me. It's brutal.
All right. Anyways, thanks for having me on.
Appreciate it, Al.
You got it.
Once again, thank you to Al Melchior from FanRag, FNTSY, FanGraphs everywhere. Great, great stuff. If you missed it, go back and listen on demand on FantasySportsNetwork.com or find the podcast ITL Fantasy Podcast on iTunes, wherever you listen. Coming up, hour two, it's Fantasy Football Talk. We got you covered. We're going through a slow mock draft. You're not going to want to miss round two because things get crazy, but we're going to break down and we've got some neat analysis. You guys, we've got some good analysis that you guys can take away from this early mock draft. So Fantasy Football coming up in hour two. It's In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, hour two. Welcome back. It's In This League. It's Bogman. It's the Welsh, a.k.a. Chris Welsh. I'm the only person that is an a.k.a. of my actual name, not the abbreviated stupid nickname that I'm given. And even Al got in on the game. We had Al Melchior in the first hour right here on FanRag and FNTSY. So if you missed any of it, go back and check this hour. We're going through a
mock
draft.
You're like Ron White, the Welsh. Is this Chris, the Welsh Welsh?
It's the Welsh Welsh. As I always say, when people have me on and they call me the Welsh, I say, please, please, let's not be formal. Don't have to use my full name. Just call me the. It's not necessary. This hour, Fantasy Football Mock Draft. That's what we got going on. We conducted a slow, early mock draft that took place over, I don't know, 10 days or something like that. Coming into June, it's very, very early. We're going to break down what happened there. It's a PPR mock, and we're going to go through heavily into the first six rounds here. That's what you're going to want to cover. If you're missing some of the action of it, inthisleague.com, that's where you can go and see a little bit of a write-up, and you can see some of the stuff we talk about. We've got this kind of neat point system we use here. If you want to visually see it, inthisleague.com or the ITL Fantasy Football Podcast, that's where you can hear the extended version of what we did. But we're going to go through this mock draft. Round two has some surprising takes. We've got some good debates in here, and I want to hear from you guys. So, this hour, it is all fantasy football, so strap in. We're going to hit it. Let's go. Twelve-man PPR mock draft because PPR is now the default, I think, everywhere. Except, man, I don't know about CBS, but like, I know, no offense to CBS, but like Yahoo and ESPN, the two major places, I think it's now PPR default.
Right, where 90% of leagues are. Maybe NFL.com is not... is not PPR by default, but the two major ones are. So
who's playing at NFL.com? Who's playing?
Nah, I mean, Rubes.
There's nobody playing that. You know who's playing there?
There's probably half the people listening to this are like, I love my team on NFL.com.
No, you know who's playing there? Like Sally in accounting, who's setting up the office fantasy football league, goes to NFL.com. Nobody goes
misogynist.
There.
I did not say that. Can you believe that?
Well, no,
you're the misogynist today.
Nothing misogynist about it. I'm just saying that's what Sally does. She goes to NFL.com. With the first pick, it went Le'Veon Bell, 1 overall, Ezekiel Elliott, 2, David Johnson, 3, three straight running backs went. I was at the 4 spot, of course, that the first three were running backs, so I was sitting there like, ugh. But I went Antonio Brown. I think he's like a safe floor, high PPR option, of course. I mean, you're kind of just picking between like Odell Beckham, Brown, or Mike Evans, depending on the person that you are. So I went Brown, 4, ODB went 5, Mike Evans went 6, Julio Jones at 7, Jordy Nelson at 8, A.J. Green at 9. Bogman, you started back up the running back run with LeSean McCoy at 10, Melvin Gordon at 11, and Jordan Howard finished out the first round on the wheel at 12. So talk to me about let's talk about the first three real quick. Three straight running backs go. I feel like this is the standard this season. Like, these are who you're choosing from. I was praying to God somebody was going to not take one of them so I could. And me personally, this is not my order. It's David Johnson, Bell, and then Elliott. So I was shocked that Sorio got David Johnson and the three hole in a PPR. But what do you think? I know you're a Bell, like, one guy.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it really doesn't matter between these three guys which one you take, as long as if you're picking in the top three, you get one of them. Take the one you like. You know, there's arguments for all of them. Le'Veon Bell and just his pace in the Steelers offense. David Johnson and what he may have to do with the Cardinals this year, and the freshest of them all, you know, Zeke has the freshest legs out of all these guys. So there's a reason to take any one of these dudes number one overall or three overall.
Yeah.
So I don't mind whatever order that you want to take them in.
I kind of don't. Like, in a full point PPR, I just don't see – if I had two, I could never take Elliott. Like, when you look at it, David Johnson, 80 receptions in 16 games. Le'Veon Bell had 75 receptions in 12 games. Give me a break. Elliott was clear in front, the best runner, averaged the most yards per game, had one less touchdown than David Johnson, though, by the way, rushing. But, you know, high touchdowns. But the catches are like more than half less than Le'Veon Bell had, and same thing as David Johnson. So when we're counting like a full point on the PPR, I just don't necessarily agree with it. But at the end of the day, like I said, whatever. Like, the top three got to be those guys. Like, I can't with kind of how this draft is going to lay out, and we're going to talk about, I can't imagine skipping on a running back here and going wide receiver because of how it gets. So how about the receivers? Did anything play differently? Were you shocked of anybody not going? Were you shocked on any order? Or is this, for the most part, kind of just like falling in line with what you think?
You know, I think that 4, 5, 6, 7 in Brown, Beckham, Evans, Julio, I think any way you cut it, those are going to be the next four picks after the first three running backs.
Julio scare you at all?
No, not really. I mean, if I take Julio, I think he's probably going to miss a game or two, but you could probably say that about any player in the NFL. So
14 games, he had more receiving yards than I think everybody but T.Y. Hilton.
He had that 300-yard game, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, he can just win you a week flat out by himself. He's ridiculous.
And only wide quarterbacks in the league. Only wide receiver to average 100 yards a game, by the way.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, that's why he doesn't scare me, is because he's probably better than most of these guys. I would say it's him and Antonio Brown, and Antonio Brown has some dealings when Roethlisberger's hurt. So, you know, all that's kind of what I see. You know, Jordy Nelson going at 8, I guess, was maybe the most surprising thing in the first round. But Jordy Nelson being a first-round pick does not surprise me even a little bit.
Sure.
Dude had so many touchdowns last year, and A.J. Green is always solid. So, no, I wouldn't say that any of these wide receivers being picked in the first round. To be honest with you, I don't think that there was anything really shocking at all in the first round.
I don't think so. I agree. I think it does come down to order. Like, there's some guys in the second round that may have a value over, you know, for some people. Like, I mean, like wide receivers, like Michael Thomas, who went in the second round. You know, some people are going to view him over like a Jordy or an AJ. Same with the running backs. There's a couple running backs that didn't go in here that I think could have gone over. So then you took McCoy, which seemed like a logical option here. Melvin Gordon, I'm very, very high on, and I like that pick, as well as Jordan Howard. I'm a fan of Jordan Howard, but the thing that screamed out to me here in a PPR format was Devontae Freeman didn't go. And Devontae Freeman, I know he lost his dude. He lost Kyle Shanahan, but the guy last year was, you know, 54 receptions. And I mean, that's along the lines of the DeMarco Murray, who also didn't go, LeSean McCoy numbers. He was a 1,000-yard rusher. He had more receiving yards than a majority of the guys in the same tier, more than Melvin, more than DeMarco Murray. I just didn't see why Freeman lasted to the second round outside of fear, but I kind of also don't necessarily have a problem with – I mean, some people are scared about Jordan Howard and maybe a regression this year. So if I had to pick a thing, I actually wouldn't pick on the players that went here. It was actually kind of the guy that didn't go.
You know, Melvin Gordon is fine, and he gets – they got improvements in the offensive line. Jordan Howard is also okay here. I don't really mind that pick. I guess people are just afraid that maybe Tevin Coleman is going to get some more bump because, I mean, I tell you what, if you do look at the guys that did go in the first round versus the guys that went in the second round, there's no one pressuring. You know, Jonathan Williams is not pressuring LeSean McCoy. Kenneth Farrow is not pressuring Melvin Gordon. And Jeremy Langford is not pressuring Jordan Howard. So there's really nowhere else to go outside of those guys. And I think that might have been the theme that we see in the first round as far as running backs go.
So one thing that Bogman put on our sheet here that we'll talk about is we have the ADPs, the current, you know, Fantasy Pros ADPs, PPR of these players. And we made and Bogman made a differential chart here. So in the first round, we have minuses or pluses. So a minus is if a guy was reached, quote unquote, reached on if he went above his rank. And a plus is if you got value on the player. In the first round, there were five players with pluses. David Johnson, Julio Jones, AJ Green, LeSean McCoy, Melvin Gordon were all drafted as pluses based on their ADP, which we'll just call those values. You know, I'm a value-based drafter. Those were value-based picks. The two worst offenders of being quote-unquote reached on based on ADPs with negative value, Jordy Nelson, who has an ADP of 12, he was taken at 8, and Jordan Howard, who has an ADP of 16, who was taken at 12 with a differential of 4. So it's hard to pick in the first round because these aren't, you know, the highest differential is negative 4, where in the next round there's a couple that change here. But, you know, you're going to also see where it teeters when we get into the second round based on some value. So it's not to say that Jordy Nelson was a reach. Jordan Howard was a reach, especially when you're on the wheel. It's just to say that some other people took advantage of some value-based drafting, with the highest being, you know, David Johnson. David Johnson, David Johnson and Julio Jones actually were the two best values here, as Johnson was ADP of 1, was drafted 3, and Julio Jones had an ADP of 5, drafted 2.
Yeah, and when we move that over to the second round, the first pick, I mean.
Let's read them off. Read off who we had, and then we'll talk about the stuff.
All right, 13 overall, first pick in the second round is Marshawn Lynch. Then we went with Michael Thomas, T.Y. Hilton, Devontae Freeman, Amari Cooper, DeMarco Murray, Allen Robinson, DeAndre Hopkins, Todd Gurley, Dez Bryant, Brandon Cooks, and Aaron Rodgers.
So let's talk about the elephant in the room, and it's pretty clear here. We actually had to disclose all this stuff. We had a guest on another podcast recently who knows about football. We were talking about this pick that happened, and there was shock that was put to it, and there was shock in the room when this happened. But where this was taken, the person who drafted it said he wanted him. He felt really good, and he felt like he wasn't making it back. So let's be fair for a moment to think. He is on the wheel. He only has the 12th and 13th pick. His next pick is the 36th pick. So for all intents and purposes, there's an understanding there, because Marshawn Lynch's ADP is 33. But it is, I would say, it's the worst offender of a differential marker in the top 8 rounds, even though there's numerically some bigger ones. Yeah, in the draft. You're right.
You're right. There's numerically bigger ones.
There's one in the fourth round, but this is the worst one.
Yeah, there are a couple numerically bigger ones, but this it's a second round pick, and it's the first pick in the second round,
and this is PPR.
Yeah, and you're right, and it's PPR.
So, I want to let you get here because I just want to say this because, you know, we're going to be fair with all of it, but this is not a good pick. It's PPR. I get that you love a guy, and I'm all for that, and you're all in your guys, and I want to say it's not a good pick, but I understand it. This is a 20-point value differential. I stick to this because it's PPR. If this were standard, I still don't like it at all, but I think it's less egregious. In PPR, Marshawn Lynch went ahead of Michael Thomas. He went ahead of Devontae freaking Freeman, DeMarco Murray. Marshawn Lynch is great, but I don't buy it.
Well, it's funny because I'm going to be high on Lynch this year. And it's because
in PPR,
who's behind him? He just in general, I'm not going to be this high. I'm not taking him over Devontae Freeman. I'm especially not taking him over DeMarco Murray.
He's ADP of 24.
Or Todd Gurley.
He's a 24 overall in PPR based on Fantasy Pros at running back, and he went 13th overall.
24 running back. That has to be like some people just didn't have them in their ranks.
It's PPR. Ty Montgomery, Tevin Coleman, Mark Ingram, Isaiah Crowell. There's a couple. CJ Anderson.
I don't care how good Ty Montgomery is. I'm not putting him ahead of Marshawn Lynch in either format. I don't care. I don't care that he was a wide receiver. Marshawn Lynch is a guy that could score 15 touchdowns.
I would say in PPR, I would take Marshawn Lynch ahead of like CJ Anderson. I would take, even though Isaiah Crowell had some good receptions last year, I'd take him over Isaiah Crowell. I might take him over Ingram just based off of the situation that's going on in New Orleans. But you start getting into like Jay Ajayi, Leonard Fournette, Devontae Freeman. That's what makes this the worst to me, is Devontae Freeman went after him. To think Jordan Howard and Devontae Freeman could have been penned on the same team in PPR, I don't know. It's crazy. But like I said, he knew what he was doing. This was his pick. He's technically right.
That's Guthrie. Guthrie's not a rookie.
No, so, Guthrie knows what the hell he's doing. Yeah. And he was right, by the way, of an ADP of 33. For all intents and purposes, He's not making it back for all intents and purposes, quote unquote, because his next pick was 36. But I think based on, I don't know, I just don't believe it. I think he would have been there with the third pick coming back. But we've been preaching this. Running backs are going like crazy. It gets freaking disgusting really quick. And to credit him, he does have two running backs now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I made a note of this, but we'll talk about it now. Marshawn Lynch, he went at 13 here, 20 spots ahead of his current ADP. Experts range from 7 to 38 in running backs.
Wow.
Okay.
What did he go here then? So then he went 7. He went 7. Okay.
What it, give me your best stat line for Marshawn Lynch this season.
All right. Well, let's see. In 2014, that's when he last played essentially a full season. 280 carries, 1,300 yards, 13 touchdowns. In 2015, he played 7 games, started 6. He had about 417 yards. I would say, I mean, I've been saying this a lot. Like, I feel like this is just like the LeGarrette Blount situation. It's just, right, he's LeGarrette Blount. We also know, and that person that we talked to off air, we were talking about, you know, the whole DeAndre Washington situation and like what they did before.
His name rhymes with Schmazer.
Yeah, exactly. And DeAndre Washington, we know, is going to get some of these receiving downs. I would say, I don't think I could take 2014 as a barrier for what Marshawn Lynch could do. Though to be fair, it's possible he had 37 carries, 367 yards and 1,300 rushing yards. I'll say you asked me the top.
Best case scenario,
I don't know, 1,200 yards, 10 touchdowns, maybe 20 catches. Is that I feel like that's super high.
Well, that's the best case scenario.
Okay.
And I'm right around there. I don't think he'll get the yards. I think that 1,000 yards, this is what I predict. This is not my best case scenario. What I predict, I would say 1,000 yards and 10 scores.
I'm with
you. That's if he stays healthy. So, and you know, you throw in 20 catches and a touchdown or two, you know, receiving.
What did LeGarrette Blount score? How did he rank out last season?
Well, LeGarrette Blount scored 18 touchdowns. I mean, he was just the hand the ball to, and Marshawn Lynch didn't wind up on the Patriots, so I'm not even going to put that on him. I think, you know, a guy that runs between the 20s, he'll break off some, you know, outside of there. He, you know, maybe comes off the field on some third downs. I don't really give a crap about DeAndre Washington, to be completely honest with you. I don't think Jalen Richard is going to push Marshawn Lynch. Now, I could be wrong about that. Maybe Jack Del Rio likes rotating those guys in and out. Maybe that's why he's willing to take a risk on an older guy like Marshawn Lynch, because he knows he's going to rotate him in and out. But I still think either way you break it down, Marshawn Lynch, what I want from him is about 1,000 yards and 8 to 12 touchdowns. I want somewhere in that window. That is a very good running back.
Okay, so let's hone it in real quick on Marshawn Lynch. We both agree every ounce of value is stripped out of this pick, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Every ounce of value is stripped out of this pick. You're reaching, and you are now in the space where you're grabbing for your value the rest of the season. And you're not sitting in this happy place, you know, in the fifth round where a guy is all of a sudden giving you second round value. You've essentially taken him in the first round. He has to perform at the highest level to bring you back your value. On a scale of 1 to 10 of this is egregious to this is great, 10 being the most egregious, 1 being this is totally fine, where does this pick sit for you above the players that were taken?
8.
8.5 for me.
Yeah, it's not the most egregious thing I've ever seen in my life, but dude, I'm taking Freeman. I'm taking Murray. I'm taking Fournette. I'm taking Ajayi. I'm taking Gurley. I'm taking all those guys at least ahead of Lynch. Lynch, to me, falls into that Lamar Miller, Christian McCaffrey, Spencer Ware, Carlos Hyde mess. That's where I would probably put him at the top of it, but that's kind of where he falls to me. So I'm just not taking him this high. Because that's, you know, I want 1,000 yards and 10 touchdowns. But you don't take anybody outside of maybe your first rounder saying, well, this is what I'm going to get from them. You know, you say, okay, what's my floor in the second round?
Yeah.
And to me, the floor is bad on players like Lynch because, you know, he could go for 650 yards and 3 touchdowns.
Hasn't played in a year.
You're right.
Yeah, no, exactly.
We don't know. And we know he hates practicing. So, you know, how is he going to install that offense and all that stuff? So let's do a poll. Let's do a poll on Lynch.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where I was going to go with this is we're going to put a poll up on the Facebook group and maybe we'll put it up on Twitter and Patreon. I don't know. Maybe we can pull them all together, but I'd like to just do it. It's minimally going to be on the Facebook discussion group, which if you just search in groups, the ITL Nation, you'll find it. You can get added to it. Is Marshawn Lynch going in the second round an awful pick or is it sneaky? Because obviously I like that he did it. And I think, and this is a mock draft, by the way, so you can't kill anybody. I like that you're trying it because here's one thing, you know, if you take Marshawn Lynch at this spot, you know, it's only going to get better if you had the last pick in the second round. And to be fair, also, I just want to credit, like, when you look at the rest of his draft, he did pretty damn good. He complimented himself really well by taking a huge risk on Marshawn Lynch. But the next couple picks Guthrie had really plays in his favor for what he did. So this is why you experiment. And this is a great discussion. To be honest with you, I'm glad he did this because this is the discussion we have to have.
It is because
Marshawn Lynch, I think, even though his ADP is 33, I think he's a commonly fourth rounder type of guy, but he's sitting in the third. By the time drafts are here, don't be shocked when Marshawn Lynch starts going at the end of the second round or in the second round. So this is a great discussion that we're having here. Let's see here what the masses have to say. You know, maybe even the poll is how risky is taking Marshawn Lynch 13 overall in a PPR? You know, I could just put like extreme risk.
1 through 10.
Yeah, well, I could just put like extreme risk, risk, none, huge value, amazing value, something like that. And we can review back on it.
All right, we're going to hit the brakes right there. We're going to take a break. And then we're going to have more football right after this break on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Football all night.
You know it.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we're back. It's In This League. Bogman the Welsh in the house. It's Fantasy Football Talk. We're going to pick right back up on our early mock draft conversation. There's some more debating to do, so let's go, Boggs. But let's talk about a couple of the other guys here in this round. Now, I guess there still was some value. I'm looking here. There was 6 players, so half of this round had positive value. But if we extrapolate and take away, like, one, you know, the plus one value.
Yeah.
Like, let's extrapolate that for a second because I'm not sure that's total value. There's right. only 2 players in this entire round that walk away with positive value. That is Devontae Freeman at 16, who we talked about, who had an ADP of 11. So that's a 5-spot value. And Dez Bryant, who had an ADP of 19 and he went 22. That's a positive of 3. So I think we've kind of killed the Devontae Freeman thing. But what do you think about Dez Bryant going 22?
You know, I don't know if I hate him going 22. I don't like Allen Robinson going ahead of Dez.
He's the worst offender in this round outside of Marshawn Lynch, the worst offender of value here. Allen Robinson had a -8 where he went 19, but he has an ADP of 27. So he belonged in the third round. He went here. He is the offender. And yeah, I mean, him and Hopkins both went ahead of Dez.
Right. And Robinson and Hopkins going ahead of Dez. I know Dez only played the 13 games last season and he didn't have a particularly great season. I think this is a result of, you know, people taking Dez in the first round. He didn't provide me back first round value. So now he's dead to me, which is funny because Allen Robinson and DeAndre Hopkins did the exact same thing. And for some reason, they're not getting hit nearly as bad. So, or at least in this draft, they didn't. So to me, Dez deserves to be over Hopkins, Robinson, and probably Cooper. You know, I would put him – I don't mind taking Hilton or Thomas over him. But the other guys, I do. Like, Dez needs to be up above those guys.
I agree. Dez is like a mid-second-round guy this year for sure. What were your favorites? And by the way, we should come back on the picks because remember, in the last round, I got Antonio Brown. Bogman got LeSean McCoy. You took T.Y. Hilton because I'm guessing you were just freaking clamoring for Michael Thomas because that's your dude. He went one pick ahead of you. And I got Todd Gurley in this round. So let's talk about our picks and then maybe any other favorites of this round.
I actually wasn't clamoring for Michael Thomas because
I don't believe that.
I really like Michael Thomas. And I, you know, anyone who is the number one option for Drew Brees is huge in my book. That's why I was so big on Cooks for a long time, right? But, you know, I was debating between Hilton and Freeman. because I know the running backs get ugly. So
I was about
to
say, why'd you pass on that?
I just wanted Hilton is so good in his PPR. He gets so many catches from Andrew Luck. You know, 91 catches for 1,448 yards last year. He only had 6 touchdowns. I feel like that could come up. You know, I really like T.Y. Hilton. And I needed a wide receiver. So if I'm looking between Hilton and Freeman, I felt like maybe I could get a value in round 3 or round 4. And so I was going to wait. And I also kind of wanted to push myself. You know, this is a mock. So let me take a good wide receiver here and see what running backs come back.
I love – that's the best answer. That is the best answer because I will tell you Freeman 1,000 times over would have been my pick here. And hindsight's 20/20. In the third round, you actually could have got some pretty good value at wide receiver. And I think at the end of the day, your third round pick in Hilton or Freeman and some of the available receivers – I mean, I don't want to speak for you. I would probably go the Freeman route. But I love the answer because that's how the mock draft should be. You should push yourself. You should, you know, take players you like, but switch out the order. That's why I think what Guthrie did is fine, is totally fine what he did here. We're just
kind of. Yeah, it's a mock. It's as long as you're not taking Steven Gostkowski in the second round.
Or the fifth round,
remember. No one's
going to crush you. Remember fifth round?
or yeah. Even the fifth round, right.
Yeah, exactly. So I love that answer for you because I would have taken Freeman, but I like you taking, you know, your wide receiver here and seeing if you can mix up the draft. What do you think about Gurley? He's probably one of the most dynamic names that's kind of moved down. I took him. I was dying for a running back because I wanted to go running back. And Todd Gurley kind of fell to me. He was the last kind of best option that I wanted. PPR, it's a little bit squirrely, and who knows if he's ever going to return. But I felt like it was a plus one on the value. His ADP was 20. I got him at 21, so it wasn't, you know, like anything crazy or anything like that. But, I mean, is that the route you would go, or would you take someone like Dez, who was a falling value here?
No, I think with what running back is this year, I don't mind taking a risk like Todd Gurley late in the second round. I mean, he was a first-round pick last year still, and you know the year before that, he was wanting to go one overall. So I don't mind taking Todd Gurley late in the second still. Rams offense, I mean, it has to be better, right?
Yeah.
But it has to be better.
Yeah. There's some other interesting things that happened. Brandon Cooks was really an oddity. He went here at 23, negative 3 value because he's an ADP of 26. Aaron Rodgers, first quarterback off the board, which was it's a little odd to me. I'm not taking Aaron Rodgers in the second, but hey, it was only a negative 4 on the value. Could have waited and probably took and
he
taken
went in the range of where he normally would.
I mean, I've said this before, but he probably got his guy in the first. Well, because he had back-to-back picks, so it actually didn't matter. It doesn't even matter if this is 25 or not. He wasn't coming back. He got his quarterback, so I think it's fine. Let's go to the third round here. First pick in the third round was Leonard Fournette, followed by Jay Ajayi, so two straight running backs, Doug Baldwin, Rob Gronkowski in the third round, Lamar Miller, Christian McCaffrey, Demaryius Thomas, Spencer Ware, Joe Mixon, Carlos Hyde, Sammy Watkins. And as I told you before, Guthrie followed up with taking Lynch. He got Keenan Allen, which I freaking love. I love this value pick here. And it's actually, now that I'm looking here, it's the second highest value of this round. So, you know, if what I really like about this, by the way, and I think this is a tip some people should do, maybe we'll start incorporating this more, Bogman, is you can kind of see maybe an overall rating of your draft if you associated ADPs with plus and minuses. Because I think at the end of the draft, with what Guthrie did, he might actually circumvent the negatives on some of the stuff that he did. You know, it's possible. You can kind of go back and look. But Keenan Allen is the final part of the draft. Let's start with our picks here, Boggs. You took Carlos Hyde, who we spent some time talking about in a previous episode. You took him with the 34th pick. He had an ADP of 42, which was a negative 8 on the value. And, I mean, which is essentially telling you could have got him in the next round. But like you said, you were kind of terrified of running backs. And you've mentioned before, you're a little less worried about him than really anybody else.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not worried about Carlos Hyde, to be honest with you. I mean, I'm worried about all running backs as far as injuries go. And he's been injury prone. I was hoping Lamar Miller, McCaffrey, or Fournette was going to fall to me. I had... like, I was kind of surprised Jay Ajayi fell to the third round with how running backs are this year. So
I wanted him.
I was holding out zero hope that he was going to fall to me. I did not think it was going to happen, and it didn't. So when I got to this spot, I looked at the wide receivers. I knew I had a pick coming up, and to me, they're kind of all the same. You know, Watkins and Allen, I don't really want – to be honest with you, I hate the wide receivers in this round outside of Baldwin. I don't want Watkins and Allen.
Except Keenan.
I don't want Keenan Allen or Sammy Watkins. These dudes are always hurt. You know, I mean, Keenan Allen has been in the league for 4 years. He's never played a full season. 15, 14, 8, and 1 his last 2 years as far as – or his career as far as games have gone. He just can't stay on the field. So, I mean – and 77 receptions is his highest. It's not like he's ever gone out and caught 120 passes. So I don't know where all this amazing upside is going to come from. I mean, Phillip Rivers has tons of options in San Diego. So I'm not trying to crap on Keenan Allen. He's a great player. I do think that the upside is strong, but I don't think it's first round worthy like a lot of people are making it out to be, especially when the dude is coming off of ACL surgery.
Well, I mean, so, take him in the first round. That's
happening last year is what I was talking about. No one's taking him in the first round this year. Everyone's tired of it. Sammy Watkins is the same story every single year. Oh, he looks great in he's looking great. And then, you know, here comes week three and he's hurt. I'm sick of it.
Okay, so obviously, to your point, coming back to your player, because of those things, that's what led you to Carlos Hyde.
Yeah. So I'm take Carlos Hyde and I'll take a wide receiver in round four and figure that out. So, yeah, I took Carlos Hyde. I was really hoping Miller or McCaffrey, who were four spots away from me, were going to fall, and they didn't.
I did something that I normally never do, and this comes back to what you said before, is experiment. This is the beginning of where I decided this is something that has gone along with me, and you guys who have listened to ITL before, you know it. Hashtag top tier players. It's back. I'm bringing it back, Bogman. I'm bringing it back. Hashtag top tier players, which I always joke about.
Are you saying that you only want to draft good players? You're crazy.
That's what I'm going for. The top players at their position, and what I've always meant by that is, you know, if you've got the number one quarterback out there, or number one position player at a spot, or you can take, you know, more depth at the same position, is go out and get the best players at their position. I know it's kind of a trite statement, but you'll kind of understand where I'm going with it. So what I did here, because this is also a value, I took Rob Gronkowski, and I never have Gronk. But it was in the third
round.
You
hate your Gronk teams. We've done a couple mocks where you take Gronk.
Never works.
You always hate him. You're always like, I want this draft to be over.
Yep.
This is the worst draft. Because you'd taken him in the first round. That's where he was going before this year.
ADP of 22. I got him at 28, which was a plus six, and it was the third highest value. And this round was really all over the board, by the way. Ajayi had a plus nine. That's how much of a value he was. He was supposed to go in the second. He went in the third. Keenan Allen was a plus. Rob Gronkowski was a plus. But then we also had some negatives. Spencer Ware, which was a negative 12, an ADP of 44, and Joe Mixon was a negative 13. But Gronkowski, it just, you know, when all said and done, I mean, this is the greatest, you know, 2015 fantasy team ever of Antonio Brown and Gurley and Rob Gronkowski. But you can never, this is the first year where you're going to be able to potentially get Gronkowski here. I thought for sure he was going on the wheel. That seems like the most prime spot for him, but people kept going. I was eyed on Ajayi and he went two picks before me. And then I had the choice between Lamar Miller, but I felt like I said, hashtag top tier players. I'm now getting the best player at the best position who puts up ridiculous, stupid numbers, you know, in the high end, like wide receiver one type of numbers at tight end, even though it's as deep as possible. And I wanted to see what my team placed out like that. So now I've got Antonio Brown, Todd Gurley, and Rob Gronkowski with a plus six value on that. So far, all the way, also, is all of my picks have been plus values.
And I just want to point this out while we're talking about tight ends and Gronk. You know, Gronk, six spots. You got a value on him. Kelsey was nine spots. And Jordan Reed, you know, we're going to get to these guys in a little bit. But Jordan Reed, 14 spots.
Huge values on tight ends.
Even the upper end tight ends are going at a value because tight end is so deep this year. Knowing that, seeing that Jordan Reed went in the fifth, you took Gronk in the third, is that going to change anything for you? Or are you still say, hey, look, I got a guy that can score 15 touchdowns at the tight end position. I'm not worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't normally take Gronk, but I would do this again. I would do this again because this is the ultimate value. I'm always a value-based drafter. Getting Gronk in the third round who returns first-round value, I'm in on that. If I don't get him, I'm not going to cry about it. You know, if I were faced with Ajayi or Gronkowski, that would have been tough. Leonard Fournette or Gronkowski, I do think those would have been tough. But at the end of the day, I'll go with Gronk. This is a scenario where I do it. His ADP of 22, I'm not doing that. I don't think I'm in on that. I had picked 21, and I was not even thinking Gronkowski at 21. It wasn't even my mind. So I'm not taking him at his ADP, but I got him at a value here. So I was feeling it. We also had a lot of the running backs. We had Fournette, Ajayi, Lamar Miller, McCaffrey, Ware, Mixon, Hyde. We had seven running backs go in the third round.
And you really start to see the value falling out of these running backs already in round three, because Ware, Mixon, and Hyde all went, you know, Ware and Mixon were both one round value over their ADP, and Carlos Hyde was around three quarters of a round higher value than his ADP taken. So, I mean, you're starting to lose value in these running backs really quick, and this is the symptom that we're going to see in the next couple rounds too, is running backs are just – they're getting snapped up almost too fast.
Yeah.
Do you think it's too fast, or do you think people are saying, hey, look, I got to get one, so I have to take one now? Are we going to see more discipline or less discipline?
No. I think this is people saying, I have to get one now. I think a lot – especially the people that are mocking now – they're kind of aware. I mean, and I think you see it build up here. I mean, on the wheel, I think the wheel is going to, this isn't fair to say, but like, I'm going to just throw out an arbitrary number. 70% of wheel picks this season are going to go running back. I really think that's true. Standard or PPR. I could totally see people going Freeman, Michael Thomas. I mean, that's a pretty damn good pick there. But don't be shocked when the wheel every single time is Jordan Howard and Devontae Freeman. Or
you mean the 1-2 wheel, right?
Yeah, the 1-2 wheel. I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant the 1-2 wheel is going to be common running back. So because of that, what that does, where before, what was it? What did we say? 8-4 running back to wide receiver or wide receiver to running back? It's now half. And then the first pick in the second round is probably a running back. So now you've got double the running backs that are gone from they were last year. People are panicking. People didn't quite panic enough in the second round. The third round, because they're too good of values of wide receivers in the second round.
Yeah, well, it's funny because we see the first three running backs all come at a value. I mean, Fournette, only two, whatever, Ajayi, nine. And then Lamar Miller, four spots. And then the rest of them in this round.
All risks. Yeah, great point. That's a great point, Bob. That's a totally and because also look at the names they are. McCaffrey, not everyone knows. Spencer Ware, we know how good he was, but he's thrown into it. Joe Mixon, one of the biggest question marks in this draft, followed up probably maybe the second biggest question mark in Carlos Hyde. So that is the epitome right there, the visual representation of people needing to be like, I can't go into the fourth round.
All right, we're going to put a stop on it right there. And we're going to pick up with more football in the last segment from In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
You're listening to In This League on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
All right, we're back. Final segment. It's mock draft talk. Let's get to these final rounds here. Break down what happened. Let's go. Get into the fourth round, and you'll kind of see some of the names that go in here.
All right, so going to round four, we've got Landry was the very first pick, Jarvis Landry. Then Tevin Coleman, who was almost a full round ahead. Again, Alshon Jeffrey, Terrell Pryor, Isaiah Crowell, Devontae Adams, Ty Montgomery, C.J. Anderson, Tom Brady, Travis Kelce, Matt Ryan, and then Michael Crabtree.
So you had one, two, three. You had four running backs go in here, one that had value, all the rest almost had a full round negative value on that. And we're only using the negative values, by the way, just based on ADPs to prove the reaching, because you see the reaching here. We had
and that's reaching according to – I mean, we don't have ADPs from Yahoo or ESPN right now. These are all MFL leagues, and I can't even remember what the other one is. So, but, I mean, these are real drafts that are happening. So I don't know. Like, when you see a guy like Jarvis Landry – going a couple spots away from C.J. Anderson, it's really surprising to me, because I know C.J. Anderson has a lot of upside and everything, but we don't even know if he's going to have a gig. It's him and Jamal Charles and Devontae Booker. I would put odds on favorite on C.J. Anderson, but you're in the fourth round. You're taking a guy that's going to start for your team, and he may not even have the job. That's where we're at on running backs.
Yeah, I don't love it. You took Alshon Jeffrey. You repeated exactly what you said. You said, I'll take my running back, and in the fourth round, I'll take my chance on a wide receiver, which Landry, Jeffrey, Terrell Pryor, I think all those guys are kind of in the same tier.
Yep.
Maybe you throw Devontae Adams in. You just took the best of your tier there, which was totally
fine. Wanted Landry, but I'm fine with Jeffrey.
I continued on my run of what I told you with hashtag top tier player Welsh, that I looked at the crew of guys here. I was honed in on Pryor and Devontae Adams, and they went. And then I was like, all right, Ty Montgomery, maybe that's where we'll go, because I only had one running back at this point. And then he went, and I was like, ah, damn it. And by the way, he was a negative 11, almost a full round ahead. So I was like, okay. And I didn't like any of the players that I was really facing with. So I went with the best quarterback who I have. I have tiered Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady in their own tier. And, you know, you even talked about quarterbacks with Chris Harris on how it kind of, you know, how this is laid out.
Right.
I took Tom Brady. I went Tom Brady. I took the best player at that position. I now have, I think you could argue, three of the four positions, I potentially have the best player at every position. Not quite, but I have Antonio Brown. I have Rob Gronkowski. And I have Tom Brady. Those are one or two at their position.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. I mean, there are only a couple quarterbacks that averaged over 20 points last year, and Brady and Rodgers were among them. It was Brady, Rodgers, Matt Ryan. I think that might have been it, to be honest with you. I'll have to do the math and look it up again. But there are only very, very few, and Brady was one of them. So
that is hashtag top-tier players, by the way. That's the epitome of what I mean by that is what I did. So, I mean, you know, not everybody may like it because I took two positions that people feel are deep that you could take later, which is absolutely true, quarterback and tight end. But I did get the best players at those positions, essentially. So, and I wanted to play around with how my draft would look like with that. Is there anything else in this round? Matt Ryan so far now epitomizes the biggest negative value. He had an ADP of 71. He was taken in the fourth round, which was two rounds early based on it, at negative 24. Take that for what it is. But, you know, quarterbacks are starting to go, and Matt Ryan was probably the next on the list. Anything you incredibly love or hate about this round?
I mean, I hate some of these running backs, man. I just – it's ugly to be taking a guy like Ty Montgomery, a guy like C.J. Anderson. And, you know, I know people are kind of torn on Crowell. And I like – you know, to be honest with you, I like Crowell. I do. But it's a Browns offense.
He was drafted at a value box. You're saying you like him, but you hate him in the fourth round, and he was a plus six.
Well, he's a plus six because of the running backs. and I don't like Duke Johnson either. So it's not like – I don't know. It's just when you see guys like Alshon Jeffrey going next to Isaiah Crowell or Jarvis Landry going next to – I mean, even I like Tevin Coleman more than all these guys. You know, I think I would take probably Travis Kelce over most of them.
Does this?
And I would take Tom Brady over most of them. I think you did the right thing. I think who took Kelce? I can't remember who took Kelce. Was that Sorio?
That was Sorio, yes.
So I feel like I would do the thing that you're doing. Like look around. I don't like any of this crap. I'm going to take the best player available at a position. I'm going to take a Travis Kelce. I'm going to take a Tom Brady. It's not always the best option, but you know, sometimes your options are kind of limited. I just don't like this round. It looks ugly to me.
I think it solidifies
every single player in this round outside of Brady and Ryan and Kelce have a significant risk.
I want to move through the next couple of rounds a little bit quicker here, but real quick. Does this, after looking at this, does this almost solidify that like your strategy is going to be two running backs in the first three rounds? Or do you think, like I only went one in the first four rounds here, do you think you can make do later?
I don't think you have to take two running backs in the first three rounds, but you have to be prepared and know that whoever you're taking round four, five, six is not 100% trustworthy. You know, you have to find the guy that you like, attach your reasoning to it, and stick to it.
Okay.
That's just the way it is. You have to say, look, C.J. Anderson is probably going to win this job in Denver. They're going to run the holy crap out of the ball. I'm going to take C.J. Anderson, and I'm not going to apologize for it. You know, even though he comes with risks, you have to be confident in what you're selecting.
All right, so I'm going to give you round five and six, and then we'll go seven and eight, and then we'll kind of call it as far as, you know, that's about 100 picks into the draft on an early, early mock. Here were the picks. Starting round five, pick 49, Stephon Diggs, Greg Olsen, Golden Tate, Tyreek Hill, 52 overall, Drew Brees, Larry Fitzgerald, Jordan Reed, Jameis Winston, Amir Abdullah, Andrew Luck, Cam Newton, and Martavis Bryant, the final pick of the fifth round, which was 60 overall. Going into the sixth round, we had Derek Carr, Mark Ingram, Brandon Marshall, Emmanuel Sanders, Julian Edelman, Bilal Powell at 66, Corey Davis, Jimmy Graham, Danny Woodhead, Dalvin Cook, Dante Moncrief, and Hunter Henry, the final pick of the sixth round here. The positive and negatives, the biggest negative differentials here, there's a couple. Jameis Winston with the biggest so far, a negative 40. He was taken 56 overall, ADP of 96. We had Cam Newton, kind of a quarterback thing, and Derek Carr. You can kind of tell these are all the negatives. Cam Newton, negative 24. Derek Carr was negative 26. Hunter Henry, though, with a negative 23, had an ADP of 95, was taken 72.
The only tight end.
I know.
The only tight end with any of that. But going back to the quarterback point that you made, the Welsh, it's the quarterback should fall. After you get past Breeze and Luck, and some people, I think Harris said he didn't want to put Luck in that group, but I do. So I think after Luck goes, Cam Newton went in round 5.
He went the pick after Luck.
The pick after Luck. Ben Roethlisberger went in round 10. The difference between them in scoring last year was 3 points. 3 points. So
that's a good point.
When you're looking at, you know, there needs to be a hard tier line on quarterbacks, and there isn't yet, because after Newton went, then Carr went 2 picks after that, and who was the other guy we said in here? Was that it? Yeah, that was it. So Derek Carr went 2 picks after that. These guys aren't in the same tier as those top upper echelon quarterbacks. So if you don't get a top one, just wait. Seriously, just wait. The difference between, I think, the next 9 quarterbacks was 15 points total. So if you're spreading that, that's like a point a week. So don't even mess with it. Just take one of them. It doesn't matter who you take in the next grouping. But don't take one of those guys where you can get a value running back, or even I would even take a risk running back over one of those quarterbacks. I would rather take Dalvin Cook. I'd rather take Danny Woodhead if I'm in PPR. I would rather take, you know, Bilal Powell, hoping that he holds off Matt Forte. I would rather do that 15 million times over then take one of those quarterbacks, knowing I can get one in round 10 that is going to be a 15-point difference
the whole year. There are only 3 quarterbacks in these 8 rounds that have a plus on the ADP to pick system that we're using. There's only 3 quarterbacks: Tom Brady, who's a plus 6, Andrew Luck, who's a plus 7, and in round 8, Russell Wilson went with a plus 10. Every other quarterback is a negative, except Drew Brees was even. He was picked on his ADP, by the way, at 53 in the 5th round. So I thought that was interesting to your point. A couple of the positives in these 2 rounds. We had Tyreek Hill, who I took. Let's talk about him in a second. He had a plus 7. Andrew Luck had the plus 7, which I told you about. Martavis Bryant was actually a plus 4. The biggest was Julian Edelman at a plus 17, and Dante Moncrief was a plus 8. Let's actually talk about Julian Edelman for 1 second, and then Tyreek Hill, and then anything else you want to cover in these 2 rounds. Edelman is falling steeply because of freaking Cooks, Hogan. Early OTAs, they had already breakdowns of where Brady was throwing, and Edelman came up like 4th on the list of targets. So people are terrified.
Who cares about OTAs? That's the dumbest crap.
People are terrified.
And the funny thing is, even with Cooks and, you know, Hogan and all that stuff, the biggest thing that hurts Edelman is Gronk being healthy. Because I went and I looked, he fell 17 spots in this. That's a round and a half. He averaged 51 yards while Gronk was playing and 88.5 without Gronk. So Gronk is a big thing. I'm sure Cooks will pull away from him too. So he's falling and falling and falling, Sexy Julian is. And I think I might be on board. I think I'm on board with Edelman falling. I've never been a big draft Edelman type of person anyway, but you would think after his big year last year, people are going to be higher on him, but this is a smart group we have. And he fell
– I almost took him.
Right where I think that he probably should have. So I think that was a good call. I think our guys did the right thing by letting him fall.
I almost took him, but I took Tyreek Hill, who had an ADP of 45. I got him at a plus 7. Last season, interesting note, he had the second lowest yards per catch of any receiver outside of Larry Fitzgerald. Larry Fitzgerald had 9.6. Tyreek Hill had 9.7, and this is off the top 50. So if you look at Fantasy Pros top 50 wide receivers, only 2 are under 10 yards per catch, and it's Fitzgerald and Tyreek Hill. But Tyreek Hill is now put in the position of being the number 1 wide receiver. He was explosive last year. He would also get some rushing attempts, and he looks to be an explosive option. And I signed him up as my number 2 with Antonio Brown, which, I don't know, maybe a little bit less than ideal, but I got a value. I know I got a value, and I don't think you're going to be able to get him in the 5th round. I think this is a product of early drafting.
Yeah, and my favorite thing about Tyreek Hill is that, I mean, he's risky, right? Because now he's going to be a number 1 wide receiver. He's a teeny tiny guy. Is he going to get injured, I think, is the biggest thing with him. But he can absolutely take over a week for you and win you the whole deal.
Yeah.
So he's one of those guys that can do it. And I mean, I like drafting the guy. I think he did a great job there.
We had a couple other interesting things happen in the sixth round. I took Danny Woodhead. He was my second running back for PPR, but I thought, I mean, I got a negative 10 on it, but I'm not sure that's right. I think that's where he should be going in the sixth round, but I really wanted Bilal Powell. That was who I was targeted on. And if had I got him, it would have been a value, but he was a negative one value. He went 66 with an ADP of 67. That was actually one of my favorite picks as well. Comment on any of these, but are you shocked that Dalvin Cook, I know he was a plus on the value, but I kind of thought he might even go a little bit earlier.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because the more I think about the situation, the less I'm in on Cook, which might be wrong, but I wound up taking Latavius Murray a couple rounds later, actually one round later. But I mean, it surprises me because of the running back situation that Cook fell. But it's also I don't know. Like, when you're looking at this again, you know, Danny Woodhead's coming off the ACL. He's going to a new offense. They like to throw the ball a lot, so maybe he's good there. But he fit in really well in San Diego. What do you think the Welsh doing it over again? You taking Woodhead over Cook again?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I had, like, a tiny internal debate about it, and then I just let it go. Because Danny Woodhead, I gave him serious thought even in the fifth round. I think he's just, as a PPR option in running back, going to Baltimore, I think there's going to be a lot of check down. I think there's going to be a lot of check down with Joe Flacco.
But he doesn't run down the field and get pass interference, which is what Joe Flacco's favorite thing is.
That's true. That is true. I think there's going to be a lot of Danny Woodhead. I've always been a Danny Woodhead fan. PPR, he's always been kind of a darling. I don't see necessarily a reason why it's going to tumble there. And really, off the team that I built, I felt like that was the best case scenario. There were running backs that I told you in the fourth round, I wanted Ty Montgomery. And, but once we got past the fourth round, like, that's why I took Tom Brady, because I didn't like any of the running backs. So I kind of sat back and waited. I was hoping to get Bilal Powell and Danny Woodhead. Didn't work out. I did pair a couple of the running backs a little bit later, but I was pretty happy about that. Any other coverage here?
Well, I mean, I really like my Brandon Marshall pick. You know, I know I was big on Brandon Marshall last year, but the quarterback situation, you know, Fitzpatrick barely played. He got concussions. He held out, all that stuff. And then it got really ugly. But going to New York with Eli, I think Brandon Marshall is going to put together a hell of a season. Well, so now, I'm pretty excited.
And now you've got Marshall, Hilton, and Jeffrey. So it's pretty good. All right, there you go. Mock draft, it's over. We even actually had, as we were recording this just a tiny bit early, a signing went down, Boggs. Jeremy Maclin. I think we were talking about that in the podcast version of this. But Jeremy Maclin is a Baltimore Raven.
Yeah, I think it's really good for his value, but now I have to hate him.
You do have to hate him because he is a he's a Raven. Joe Flacco just extending his elite status. Am I right? Am I right?
Huh. God, yeah, you and every Raven fan.
Nope.
Can't spell elite without Flacco.
Yeah, don't worry. I'm completely being facetious. Not a Joe Flacco guy. Not a Joe Flacco guy. Hope you guys enjoyed it in this league on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. You miss any of the action, check it on demand right here on FantasySportsNetwork.com. InThisLeague.com is where you can find shirts and you can find our insider program. You can find all the podcasts that we do. We didn't even talk about it here, but we got the baseball draft, MLB draft happened, and I'm going to be joined by James Anderson from RotoWire on the Prospect One podcast. So if you want some analysis from the fantasy perspective of the draft, go check there. Maybe we'll put a little bit on this next week. But for Bogman, I'm the Welsh. Bye.